Welcome to Atheist Talk on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Good morning to all of you joining us locally by radio and streaming online. We appreciate you tuning in. Today is Sunday, April 16th, 2017, and I'm your host, Hertzy Hertz. With me in studio is Greg Layden, and we are here to chat with Jeffrey Rojas regarding the anticipated Minnesota March for Science. This is, alas, a pre-recorded interview, but please give us your feedback with your emails to radio@mnatheist.org or tweet us at Atheist Talk. Whether you are listening today or whether you're listening to this podcast later. Greg, Jeff, welcome to Atheist Talk.
Thanks, Hertzy. Very much. Jeff, good to see you. I want to start off by just noting how I found out about Science March, not Minnesota Science March, but the general Science March and how that went, because it was kind of an interesting evolutionary thing that happened. I think the Women's March had already occurred, and obviously, there were a lot of other protests going on, and people were talking about Indivisible was forming, and things were kind of getting going in response to the election. And I communicate a lot. I stay in very close touch with a pretty good number of scientists in the climate change area, mainly, who are also communicators and some journalists and, you know, professional experts on how to shape your message kind of thing. And somebody sent around a note saying, hey, they're going to have this thing. There's a science march that's being planned. And the very first response I saw from a colleague was, oh, no, the scientists are going to try to do this, with the idea being basically that why would scientists be any good at this? They're going to screw it up. They're not going to get it right. They're not going to know how to do it. They know how to do science, but don't know how to do communications and so on. Somebody better get a hold of them and tell them to not do it. And a bunch of people got on board with that and started trying to find out who's doing this. And pretty soon, a couple of my colleagues sent around a note saying, you know, I'm talking to them, and they may not know what they're doing, but they want to know how to do it. Pretty soon, it was very obvious that the people organizing this were, in fact, paying attention to communications experts and march organizers and so on. But what I thought about that was interesting, that the assumption here was that scientists, for the first time ever in history, have been attacked, and now for the first time ever in history are fighting back. And I thought about the last few hundred years of science being constantly attacked and constantly fighting back, and realized that's probably not what's going on right now. Jeff, how did it go for you? Did the Science March National contact you? Did you hear about them? Did you talk to them? How did you develop the idea of creating a Minnesota March, and how much of this was done on Twitter?
Well, I didn't actually create the Science March in Minnesota. As soon as I heard about it, I was looking online, and somebody had already created a Facebook page for the March for Science Minnesota. And after seeing it, I just got involved, showed up to the first meeting along with, I think, 30 other people, and was silly enough to volunteer for it and bit off much more than I should have.
Were most of the people there at that first meeting University of Minnesota scientists?
No, there were actually not a whole lot of, I guess, academic scientists the way most people would think. A lot of the people there were students, graduate students, a couple of scientists from the private sector, a couple of scientists from the university. Mm-hmm. So it was actually a really diverse group of people.
That actually brings up an interesting point that I think a lot of people don't realize. I had the job at the University of Minnesota for a while of linking College of Liberal Arts students with science projects. And the first thing I decided to do was to make a list of the scientists at the University of Minnesota. A few weeks later, I gave up, because it turns out that there's so many that there were like thousands. And people need to realize, I think, that it isn't like there's like 10 or 12 scientists down at the U who are upset and want to have a march, but science jobs and related jobs in Minnesota is as big as any other industry here, because it's in medical devices, it's in technology, it's in agriculture, which is really big here, plus this giant university. How many scientists do you think there are in the state?
I don't know. It'd be pretty hard to – I really don't know. This is something that has come up a few times in discussing it, is – no one really knows, because if you turned and asked a group of friends, you're probably going to find out a couple of them are quote-unquote scientists or researchers, but most people don't bring it up in conversation.
I was at an award ceremony last night for the Minnesota Book Awards. Sean Otto, who wrote The War on Science, got the award, by the way, for best nonfiction book. And we're sitting at dinner, and there was a table with eight people. And someone said, how many people here have a science background? And one person had been a political scientist. Mm-hmm. And everyone else, including Rebecca Otto, Sean's wife, and everyone else either was or is, you know, someone with a science background. Before we get any farther, though, can you just give us the basic facts? You know, when's the march? Where's the march? How do you go to it? How do you get to it? What do people need to know who want to participate in the march?
Okay. the march is April 22nd in St. Paul. Well, the local march is in St. Paul anyway. It's going to start on Cathedral Hill in St. Paul, and we're going to be starting the march at 11 a.m., walking straight down John Ireland Boulevard toward the South Mall of the State Capitol. And starting around 12 p.m., we're going to have a series of speakers talking about science, science policy, and how science has evolved over – or how science understanding has evolved over the last century, and how important a lot of it is to the public interest. And in terms of attendance at this point, it's really hard to know how many people are going to show up versus how many people have RSVP'd and showed interest. Based on my experience with volunteering, I'd say it's going to be somewhere around 5,000 to 10,000 people. In terms of how do you get there, you drive, you take the light rail. The light rail is probably going to be best because it's
I was going to say, actually, if you look up on meetup.com, one of our members has actually chartered a bus. So that is a great way to go to save on parking and walking.
Where's the bus start from?
The bus will start at the members, I believe, the member's place of residence, which is over by 94 in Snelling. But you can go on Meetup and get all those details.
That's a good way. I've been attending Indivisible meetings. Occupy, they were intense. We're just intense. Indivisible meetings, and one group that is going as a group, the CD3 Indivisible group is going as a group, and they're going to be there's a few other groups that are going like that, I think. So how many science marches do you know about that are happening across the country besides the one in Washington, D.C., which is the big one?
I've been told around 400.
I would guess 20 or 50.
Yeah. We've got the Central March in the Twin Cities. But as we all know, the majority of the population in Minnesota is not concentrated within Hennepin and Ramsey County. So there are actually 10 science marches in Minnesota.
Really?
Yeah. Actually, so there's going to be a march in pretty much every congressional district in our state. The number of people showing up to each of the marches is probably not going to be 5,000 to 10,000 people.
Yeah. It might be just dozens of people in some places. But
I can't recall the cities off the top of my head because I don't have the greatest memory in keeping track of it was 6 at one point and then it grew to 8, and when I was having a conversation with somebody, they pointed out it was 10. Mm-hmm. And so you could go to the marchforscience.com website and look them up.
And they're listed there?
Yeah.
Okay. And, of course, all the big cities are having them or around the country.
Yeah.
Or most of them, and universities and so on. So this could be – to me, this is interesting because even though, as I noted before, scientists have always been under attack in some way or another – and science has always resisted in one way or another. We could talk about that, I think, later. But this might be kind of new. Is there a precedent for this kind of activity among scientists that you know of?
Not that I know of, but I've only been involved in advocacy or activism for the last, I'd say, 2 years. So I'm not really the best person to ask about the history of public action regarding science.
I would argue that – I mean, science is – you know, I'm a bioanthropologist, so my science is broad. So, you know, to me, I'm interested in the science of race and racism. Therefore, the entire civil rights movement is part of the science march, you know, mm-hmm. by my definition. But I think environmental issues are largely a science issue as well, and that has been that is an area where there's something similar. People are talking about science-based policy issues in those areas. But, yeah, I can't think of any either. Times where scientists as scientists have gotten together as a group to go out and march. By the way, does Minnesota March for Science have a T-shirt or a hat or anything like that that people can get? I have a National Science March shirt ready to go. My whole family will be wearing them.
Yeah. So we've got merchandise, which is, you can find if you go to marchforscienceminnesota.com and go to the store link. We're raising money through a website called Bonfire, where a portion of all of the sales for our T-shirts goes to the march. At this point, if you order them, they're not going to be arriving by the time of the march. But if you do order them, you will be donating to the march.
Okay, and you've got, so it's a T-shirt with your logo or
yeah.
Your okay.
Have you heard of anything like – because I know that the Women's March had the pink hats. Have you heard of anything like that? Because I think I heard somewhere that the National Science March, they were looking at brain hats. Oh, and we'll actually get that answer as soon as the break is over. So please stay with us through the break, and we'll return to Atheist Talk with our guest Jeffrey Rojas. I'm Hertzie Hertz here with Greg Layden, and you're listening to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Welcome back to AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You're tuned in to Atheist Talk, and I'm your host, Hertzie Hertz, here with Greg Layden. Today's guest is one of the organizers for the Minnesota March of Science, Jeffrey Rojas. Before we get back, however, I'd want to remind everyone listening that immediately following this program, you can listen to American Atheist Viewpoint, an official production from American Atheists. So stick around, and remember, you can always catch American Atheist Viewpoint by subscribing to the podcast version in iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or the podcast player of your choice. As for the here and now, if you'd like to get more information regarding today's show, you can email us at radio@mnatheist.org or tweet us at Atheist Talk. We do have a couple of announcements here. Our donors of the week are all of you, so thank you so much for all of your wonderful donations that keep us on the air. And we do want to have an event to highlight this month. It is April 22nd. Lo and behold, the March for Science. Minnesota Atheist is an official sponsor of the march, and we have a meetup where a member has chartered a school bus. Yes, a school bus, and no, it is not magical. I checked. To bring in as many people as we can. The march has garnered a lot of publicity and looks to be bringing a few thousand people. So to save on parking and anything else, check out the meetup. The march is also looking for volunteers, specifically marshals for the march. And if you're interested, you can check out their website at www.marchforsciencemn.com/volunteer. Hope you see you there, and don't forget your lab coat.
When I first thought about what you should wear at the Science March, the first thing that occurred to me was lab coat. And I think my wife's a science teacher. I think a lot of her science colleagues are going, and I think they're bringing in their lab coats. But actually, that was I've heard people discouraging that because there's this idea that scientists are somehow – like you wear the lab coat, you're like the Greek philosopher or you're this – you know, like you're –
I was going to ask, as a person who's not a scientist but I love costuming, I actually have a lab coat. Would it be faux pas for
me
to wear
it? Impersonating a scientist? No. No, I think that's the thing. This is not – well, okay. Is this a march – let me just ask you the question. Is this a march of scientists or – it's a march for science, right?
Yeah.
People aren't scientists. They're supposed to come to this, right?
Yeah, it's a march for science. It's not a march for scientists. If you look at our volunteer list, for instance, only about one-third of our volunteers are what somebody might classify as scientists. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of teachers, students, retired teachers, pretty much people from every walk of life because – the reason everybody is marching for this is because the public at large has recognized sort of the crisis we're in as a society when people begin to ignore science in the public sphere. And so, yeah, it's a march. It's a march for science, not scientists. So the more casually people dress, probably the better. I know as a physicist, I've rarely ever worn a lab coat in my life.
Yeah, most scientists don't wear lab coats most of the time.
And I did ask this question before the break. Is there an official hat? Because I actually have some brain fabric coming in.
Not really. There's been some people talking about sewing the – or knitting, I suppose, these sort of brain caps you're talking about. And recently some people have started knitting what they call resistor beanies, which are – these beanies with the electrical shorthand for a resistor.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So you have two hat options. I like this.
Yeah.
You mean it would have the ohm symbol or would have a cylindrical thing with two wires sticking out?
No, the ohm symbol.
Okay.
Can we do both?
Yeah. You can have the ohm symbol on the – so, okay, what is the outcome you're hoping for? What's the best outcome of this whole exercise?
The best outcome will be people becoming vocal and active in trying to make science policy and make the mission of the march central to ongoing policymaking. Scientists and I think science activists have largely kind of assumed science will eventually win out if we just casually communicate it and do what scientists do best, which is do research and publish it and then research something else. And so ideally, our march has a three-point mission that we're trying to communicate very clearly to policymakers, which is one, that all policy decisions being made need to be made based in evidence and, very importantly, scientific consensus. With the second part, it's pretty easy for people, for instance, to just kind of pick one piece of evidence and say, see, this is actually what some researcher found, so this is how we should be acting. The second point is there should be no censorship of science and scientific outcomes. Scientific research being paid for by the public should, of course, be available to the public. And then the third point is we need to have, as a country, dedicated and generous funding for higher education and scientific research. Science contributes and is absolutely central to the progress of society. So ignoring it sort of creates a crisis in society.
Are there key examples you would point to of science being ignored or put aside in policy right now in Minnesota or at the federal level that you would mention as relevant?
I think the biggest one is climate change. I mean, we see a certain amount of legislation going forward, but it's only recently that the climate caucus in D.C. has gotten increasing support from a lot of legislators. And while we have gotten a limited amount of policy support for things such as encouraging the development of green energy, I think a lot of policymakers don't recognize the very immediate crisis we face as a planet due to climate change. Because if they did, they would be enacting much more aggressive legislation. So I think this is just one example of people ignoring science.
Yeah, I happened to glance at the list of bills that are currently – the legislative session is currently in – I won't go into any details or make any statements about any bills. But if you look at the list of bills that are currently – there's a really large number. The number of bills for some reason that is being looked at by various committees in the legislature right now is really large compared to most – it seems to really big. It's like over 60. And of them, there's a lot of them that have to do with energy. Mm-hmm. We have to do this with conservation policies, which are science-based. In Minnesota, obviously, we have an energy plan. There's a clean energy plan, and there's things like, you know, wolf conservation, and that's a scientific question. There's quite a bit just going on in Minnesota that I think anybody can go to the state. I think you can go to the state legislature website and just look at all the bills in the House and Senate. And it'd be interesting game to figure out. It's about a third of them are science. related.
One thing that's really nice is actually you can also sign up and then you can get updates on bills that you want to follow. You can do that at the national level and at the state level.
Right.
I've taken a little bit of an interest in this.
And there are apps.
And I would really encourage listeners to be doing this. It's very important to be informed and active in policy, especially for science.
Just takes a phone call or an email to express your opinions to your representative.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll be returning with our guest, Jeffrey Rojas, right after the break. Please stay with us. I'm Hertzy Hertz, here with Greg Layden, and you're listening to Atheist Talk on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Thank you for tuning in to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF. I'm your host, Hertzy Hertz, in studio today with Greg Layden. And we're having what I would definitely classify as a fascinating conversation with community organizer Jeffrey Rojas. Before we continue this conversation, which will be our final segment with Jeffrey, there is a bit of housekeeping I need to attend to. It's really important to me that we keep secular voices on the public waves and in podcast form. Atheist Talk is produced with funding from the Minnesota Atheists, the Humanist of Minnesota, and Cucumbers Restaurant in Edina. Please consider visiting our sponsors, and if you do, let them know that you appreciate their support of Atheist Talk. If you'd like to advertise on this program and help keep us on the air, please contact us at radio@mnatheist.org. This radio program is put together by dedicated volunteers and the generous support of you, our listeners. You keep Atheist Talk on the air and in podcast form. Personally, I like to use this show to look at the world through multiple lenses and learn something new each week. If you're able to help us with a donation, please consider doing so at our Radio Fund page. Minnesota Atheists is a 501c3 tax-deductible organization, and we could not do this show without you, and we deeply appreciate your support. Music for the Atheist Talk is composed by member Brent Michael Davis and is used with permission. As always, check out the Minnesota Atheist website. We've got podcasts of previous programs. You can browse articles, book reviews, and peruse the calendar for upcoming events. We always have a ton of activities going around the Twin Cities and the outlying suburbs. If you want to get involved, check out the website and sign up for the Atheist Weekly email. AWE will tell you when Godless Gamers meets, will help you find an agnostic AA group, or a local book club, and even lets you know what speakers Minnesota Atheists have lined up. It's a great tool to stay connected to the community. If you enjoy this show and all that Minnesota Atheists has to offer, consider becoming a member of Minnesota Atheists while you're on the website. Your support helps us serve you better. With all that relevant and very useful information out of the way, let's get back to our conversation with Jeffrey Rojas.
Thanks. Jeff, you mentioned you have speakers, obviously. Who are your speakers?
I just want to say we're trying to keep the speakers section at the rally short because we don't want people getting bored as they're standing around in whatever the weather happens to be that afternoon.
Much appreciated.
So for speakers, we have Mark Seeley, who's a faculty member at the university and a climate scientist who is also a regular contributor to NPR.
If the weather's really bad, he's not going to show up.
Right, and he'll know ahead of time. He'll definitely know ahead of time.
At least if his forecast is really off, he's not going to
show up.
Okay,
so we should follow his Twitter, and if he says I'm not showing up, we should bring umbrellas.
Yeah. He's a great speaker. That'll be really great. People love him.
Sorry, just as a side note, when I was speaking with him, there was a very funny anecdote where he indicated he's going to be retiring soon, and I said, well, you know, this is a great opportunity to go out on a high note by speaking to 5,000 people. And he shrugged and said, well, I speak to 750,000 people every week, so this won't really be a big deal. Then we have a colleague I know, Bob Wealth, who's a livestock and agronomy scientist who sort of spends, I'd say, about 3/5 of his time out in rural Minnesota and Wisconsin doing field work for dairy production. We have Alan Lifson, who's a physician and a faculty scientist at the University of Minnesota, who has been doing AIDS work for the last 4 decades, as well as some epidemiology work in Africa. Then we have Lindsay Burdick, who's a biology and physical science teacher up in District 279. And then along with everybody, we have a number of students who are going to be talking about it, high school students and a couple of very young students who we thought it would be good to have them talk since, a big issue that science is facing, as I said before, is climate change. And while I'm no longer on the planet, they're going to be the ones who are. And then heading it up will be Congresswoman Betty McCollum, since St. Paul is her district. And she recently co-sponsored two science bills out in D.C. about scientific integrity and open access to science data.
I want to apologize for something, too, since you mentioned science bills. Several years ago, I was teaching a class at the University of Minnesota, and I'm apologizing here to America and to the rest of the world. And I was teaching about evolution, and I was teaching about climate change. And a young man came up to me, and I usually don't repeat the conversations of students, but he objected to me teaching about evolution and climate change. You know, that's common. You know, 500 students in a class, that happens. No big deal. I appreciate him thinking and paying attention to that. We had a conversation. A couple days later, he comes back, and he says, well, my mother is really upset about this, and she's going to do something about it. And so that's not that unusual either, you know. So I figured, fine, she's going to call the department chair or something. Turns out his mother was a member of the state legislature and introduced a bill saying that if you're going to teach evolution, you better also teach creation. If you're going to teach climate change, you better teach anti-climate change. It was the first academic freedom bill introduced in a state legislature in America by Tea Party founder Michelle Bachmann. So I'm sorry that I got it all started and I ruined everything for everybody. If I had not been teaching that class – but I had to teach the evolution. I had to teach the creation, the climate science.
I would put more of that – more on the Bachmann, you know. Teaching the truth, I think, should never be an issue.
But I mean, another thing too is – and I like your response. It's like what is the edge – what is the limit of science? When you think about it like, where are the responsibilities? You talk about students, young people coming in. What occurs to me is, you know, my wife, as I mentioned, is a biology teacher. And there was about a three-year period where she was constantly having students come in who actually believed, maybe 1 in 10 students, not a large number, maybe 2 in 10, who actually believed that mermaids and dragons were real because there had been a documentary on them. I don't remember. It was one of those cable channels. I saw the dragon one. The paleontologist found these bones, and they were astonished to see various features. And finally, they figured out this is a dragon. Dragons are real, and it was a big deal. And they never really made it that clear that this is a fake TV show. And so, you know, for years, you're battling until everyone gets old and dies and moves on, and they don't reshow it. All these people think that dragons are real. That's actually a problem. I mean, that sounds silly, and who cares? But if you can believe dragons are real, you can also believe that carbon capture will take care of climate change because it's basic science. There's certain things we can do and can't do.
Speaking of dragons and such, if anyone's interested, the Science Museum has a mythical creatures exhibit, obviously not saying that those creatures are real, but I actually went through it. It was fascinating because they talked about how people confused bones and such for things like dragons or cyclopses. But – I'm a really big geek, and so the idea of actually thinking dragons are real is kind of interesting.
And also because there is a large overlap, speaking of geeks, there's a large overlap between people who are into fantasy as a form of entertainment and art as expression who are fine. They don't think that dragons are real, even though they think dragons are great. So, I mean, what is the outer range or the outer limit of – not to refer to any old TV shows or anything, of where you think science fits in society?
First, that was actually a good point to make. I want to give a quick plug. I'm not sure if anybody noticed our growing list of endorsements, but one of the recent endorsements we got was actually the Science Museum of Minnesota, who really supports this idea of showing public support and educating the public about science. So they're now one of our 60-plus endorsers, most of which are not professional science organizations.
One of which is Minnesota Atheists.
Right. Potentially one of the, I think, first five groups of this 60 that gave an endorsement.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So in terms of the boundaries of science, based on your question, I guess I'm a little confused. Do you mean about education or the boundaries of actively trying to sort of—
Well, I guess it's kind of a leading question. I just mean in the sense of, you know, I guess my answer would be there isn't a boundary, maybe, that we're talking about how you solve things, how you solve problems. Scientific thinking is something that permeates everything in a way, right?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, so is something like social justice. These are not mutually exclusive things. It isn't like these people over here want social justice, these people over here want art, and these people over here want science.
Oh, in that sense, I don't think – no, there is no boundary to science. I mean, science is literally nothing other than a way of thinking about describing the natural world. This is one of the reasons we have such a ridiculously diverse group of endorsers. For instance, we have MN350, we have Minnesota Atheists, we have Interfaith Power and Light, we have the Minnesota Nurses Association. I'm trying to just randomly think of them. We've got SEIU 284. Oh my gosh, the list is pretty big.
What about Big Science in Minnesota? Do you have endorsements from Medtronic or any of those?
No, we've got some endorsements from a few of the smaller companies like Biotechna and Immunochemistry. I think for large companies, endorsing a public march and/or protest is a little risky.
Irresponsible of them. You were going to say,
yeah,
we're going to have to fix that. That's worse. That's something that all the people are listening to this who work for Medtronic and General Mills, you know, just talk to whoever is in charge of you and complain.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons the smaller biotech and science companies support us so much is they are very dependent on NIH funding for the R&D they need to succeed. Larger companies have grown so much that they can largely function on internal R&D. Mm-hmm. And the recent 25% to 30% proposed cuts to NIH is going to mean for the smaller companies actually laying people off.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas a lot of our Minnesota big science, for example, is medical devices, which doesn't depend – they do the research and all that. And it's a fascinating story, and it's an amazingly important part of Minnesota, and we love big medicine, you know. But they're just big giant companies that make piles of money on their product and not so much on other things, and big ag as well. But as you point out, you've got a speaker who's an ag expert.
Yeah.
You can argue all you want one way or the other about how to do agriculture, but you are going to sit down every day and eat three times.
Yeah.
And it's science that gives you that food the way you want it and the way you get it. You know, it isn't something else. It's all science. It's agricultural science. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you have any idea how big this science – are you – I just want to ask you quickly, how much do you guys work with the National March for Science people?
We have a liaison that works with them. It's incredibly grassroots, so we largely function pretty much completely independent of one another, which
– You don't feel competitive? People have to decide to go to Washington or not.
Yeah.
That's not really a big factor, is it? Most people are going to go – who's going to go to Washington is going to go, and it's not that many people.
Yeah. Grassroots functions just like science. Everybody does what they want to do, and somehow it all comes together in the end.
Right. Well, I'll be there at the march, and
as will I.
I think all the Minnesota atheists will probably be there.
I hope so. But thank you for tuning in to Atheist Talk. We'd love for you to join us again next Sunday, which should be another exciting episode with a special guest from the FFRF. I'm proud to be on the air with Minnesota Atheists, and I hope you've enjoyed the show. The show depends on generous support from our members, and thank you for tuning in. Have a wonderful day and see you next week.
Hello. Hello and welcome to the American Atheist Viewpoint for Sunday, April 16th, 2017. I'm Nick Fish, National Program Director for American Atheists, and thank you as always for joining us. I'd like to talk about a study that just came out this week from two psychologists at the University of Kentucky, and this is presenting some really interesting numbers that I think a lot of us kind of intuitively understand, and it's nice to have some backing on this. And I want to talk a little bit about the methodology and what this study actually shows. And so what it is, this is Will Gervais and Maxine Nagel. I'm probably mispronouncing that last name. They've done research now into the number of people in the United States who are atheists. And what they thought, one of the reasons that they did the study in the way that they did, is because they sort of intuitively or supposed or made the hypothesis that people didn't want to admit to being atheists, that there's a lot of social stigma, that atheists are still very, you know, distrusted, that the overall feelings toward atheists are relatively cool in this country. And so they surmised that people didn't really want to admit, even to an anonymous, you know, pollster or even filling out a form, to being atheists. So what they did is they designed a study that asked people a variety of questions. Those questions ranged from things like, are you a vegetarian? Have you been to New York City? And in one of the samples, in one of the groups, they added in the question, do you believe in God? Now, what they asked participants to do was write down the number of statements that accurately described them. So don't go through and answer each individual question. Just look through and look at all the questions and write down the number that are reflective of you. And what they found is that in the group, in the half of this, of the 2,000 people that they surveyed, in the half that had the question about God, the number who indicated that they do believe in God was much lower than what polling from Pew or Gallup or any other polling company has come out with. So Pew has said previously that, you know, depending on how you ask the question, maybe 3-4% of atheists or of people say that they're atheists. They found that 9% of people say they don't believe in God or a universal spirit, which means that there are, you know, this huge number of people who won't use that A word, despite the fact that they meet the definition of being an atheist. And if you ask if you look at Gallup, they just straight up asked, do you believe in God? And something like 10% said no. So, you know, these numbers are these are kind of the baseline numbers. These are the numbers that a lot of us have gone off of for quite some time. But what these two researchers found in their study that they that has a little bit of an error rate. They're not, you know, 100% on what the number is. But they said that they have a 99% confidence that the number is much higher than 10%. The important thing, or the top line number, their best estimate is 26% of Americans don't believe in God. That's a huge number. I mean, that's potentially game changing in the way that we think about how our government should represent us. Thinking about, you know, the potential community that's out there of people who don't believe in God. That's just a startling number. And, you know, the interesting thing that goes along with that number of 26% of people not believing in God is that huge numbers of them don't feel comfortable saying that. Only about a third of people will, you know, take that label and are comfortable with it. And that indicates that we still have work to do. That goes back to a lot of what American Atheist President Dave Silverman has been talking about. It goes back to what we as an organization talk about, that we have to destigmatize the word atheist, that we have to do more to break down those preconceived notions about what it is to be an atheist, about, you know, the morality of atheists and challenge people's preconceptions. But one of the only ways we can do that, and in fact, the best way to do that, is to have people who are atheists actually admit it and take that first step. There's nothing more powerful in breaking down stigma than knowing a person who fits within that community. You know, this is something that's been studied over and over with relation to the LGBTQ community, that people, more and more people coming out, snowballs, and it leads to people who were sort of on the fence or had, you know, neutral or slightly cool feelings toward a particular group. If they know a person who is a part of that group, they're much more likely to be supportive of that group overall. And again, you know, while I'm always a little bit hesitant to make that comparison between the atheist community and the LGBTQ community, because it is an imperfect metaphor, there's a lot that can be gleaned from that. There's a lot that we can look at as far as acceptance and you know, being out, if you will, about what it is that we believe and don't believe. So one of the limitations of this study is the methodology is a little more complex. It doesn't get at the fundamental question necessarily of, do you believe in God? It doesn't ask that question. So it can sometimes be difficult to, you know, control for things or make sure that the number is really narrow down in, drill in on that number and really get it down to a very narrow confidence interval. Instead, you know, you're left with a pretty wide margin of error. But the bottom line is, when you look at this, more people, they say with 99% certainty, far more people than the 10 or 11% are atheists in this country. I think they said it was something like, and they have a 92% confidence rating, that it's something like 17 or 18%, which is almost twice what we would otherwise think the number would be. So, this is important news. And this is something that we need to try to reproduce. This is something that, you know, we need more studies to look at, you know, keep drilling in on that methodology, try to continue to improve it. But it really gets at a thing that a lot of us intuitively, know, that belief in God is complicated, that, you know, there are varying degrees, for some people, of belief. And, you know, we have to continue to dig in on this because it does matter. It does matter how many atheists are out there. It matters when you're looking at the demographics, when you're looking at, you know, what groups have relative power. But the only way that we can leverage that power is to continue to organize. And on the note of organizing, I just want to plug very briefly the March for Science. American Atheists is partnering with our friends at the Secular Coalition and the American Humanist Association and others, CFI, to participate in the March for Science in Washington, D.C. More details coming out about that, so just keep an eye out on your email. But we'll be there. We hope you're able to attend, if not the march in D.C., but certainly one of the satellite marches that's happening all throughout the country. They're you know, hundreds of locations all throughout the country that if you're not able to get to D.C., you know, we need to stand up for evidence-based public policy and science literacy. That's an important thing that our community can continue to push that has nothing to do with being an atheist specifically. It has to do with reason and rationality and, you know, looking for the best evidence. So that's all the time I have for this week. You can learn more about our work at www.atheists.org. We have a lot on our plates coming up, so keep an eye out for more news from us. Take care and talk to you soon.